one to two to three times a week, pull your dinner up really early and finish dinner at like four and just be done, go for a walk and go to bed early, you know? And so that's kind of like where I went from doing it as much as you want in the morning, whenever, like maybe throwing in 24 hours. So now I'm like, whoa, 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 don't necessarily do a 24 hour or 48, like maybe just try a couple days of evening or dinner skipping and then go from there.
It's no secret that my approach to the ketogenic diet has changed severely over the last decade practicing the ketogenic diet. I can't even understand how I started eating keto in 2014. It's now 2024. It's been 10 years. The way that I see this diet has shifted immensely. The way I approach it with my clients has shifted so much. And myself personally, having used the ketogenic diet to get my period back and regulate my hormones, it's just so cool to see how incredibly powerful this diet can be. It's something that I stand behind. I will probably always stand behind this diet. And over time, and Temple, our guest today, and I share a lot about this in today's episode, over time, the things that we did to get our health back aren't necessarily the things that we do to maintain our health when we get to a different phase. And so our guest, Temple Stewart, she's been on the show a couple of times. Her and I are just chatting about how our view of keto has changed over time, how we practice it differently, and some areas that we wish we would have smartened up on personally, fasting being a big part of that. And so I'm so glad to have Temple back on the show. She is just such a sweet individual that's so willing to share and is just a prime example of a great practitioner who cares so deeply for the individuals that she impacts on a daily basis. She is a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and naturopathic doctor medical student specializing in low-carb ketogenic diets. She graduated from the University of Tennessee before starting her career at the Veterans Affairs Hospital in Bay Pines, Florida. After 3 years of a clinical dietitian practice, Temple began her private practice specializing in the ketogenic diet. Motivated by her journey of reversing PCOS, losing 60 pounds, and getting pregnant naturally, Temple helps women regain control over their weight, health, and hormones worldwide. Oh, I just love Temple. You can connect with her by going to templestewartrd.com. Okay, let's cut over to our time with Temple Stewart.
Hey, my name is Leanne Vogel. I'm fascinated with helping women navigate how to eat, move, and care for their bodies using a low-carb diet. I'm a small-town holistic nutritionist turned three-time international best-selling author turned functional medicine practitioner offering telemedicine services around the globe to women looking to better their health and stop second-guessing themselves. I'm here to teach you how to wade through the wellness noise to get to the good stuff that'll help you achieve your goals. We're supporting your low-carb life beyond the if it fits your macros conversation. Hormones, emotions, relationship to your body, workouts, letdowns, motivation, blood work, detoxing, metabolism. I'm providing the tools to put your motivation into action. Think of it like quality time with your bestie mixed with a little med school so you're empowered at your next doctor visit. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged while you learn about your body and how to care for it better. This is the Keto Diet Podcast.
Hey, Temple, how's it going?
I am so happy to see you and be back. This is going to be a lot of fun.
It's been a hot minute. I don't even remember the last time. I'm like quickly going through my schedule to see like the last time you were on the show. I don't even know. A while ago. Oh, here we go. January 18th, 2022. Does that seem right?
Yeah, it does. And then we got lunch shortly after. I think that maybe that same year we went when we were in Boca together.
Yeah.
That was fun. That was a lot of fun.
That was so fun. I love being able, it's a unique opportunity to get to connect with people like in person and then be able to have conversations online. It's just so special.
I completely agree. It's really, I love the face-to-face connection that we've all missed out on for a long time. So,
oh, 100%. So long. Okay. So you've been on the show before, but for people that may not know you, can you introduce yourself outside of your official bio that I just read? Like, tell us a little bit about yourself. What lights you up? What you're up to?
Yeah, you know, I got into the health space like a lot of other people. Just I was really sick and really struggling with my weight and all the things. I couldn't figure out what was going on. I was in school as a registered dietitian, and it just I couldn't put the pieces together to feel good. You know, aside from like the health journey stuff, I am a believer. I love the Lord. I have two little kids. I'm married to a pastor. You know, I love anything and everything outdoors. I grew up in South Mississippi, which is probably a part of my health journey in a lot of ways. But, you know, that's kind of me in a nutshell when it comes to hobbies and stuff. But I really have a passion for what I do. And I think I've been uniquely placed in this space because a lot of women need help and it's a lot of fun, you know, doing what we get to do for sure.
Isn't it? Like, I just had a session with a client who I've been working with since October 2022. And as I was going through her file and just everything, I'm like, wow, she's a completely different person. Like, so much has changed and shifted. And like, I get to play a small role in that and nudging her in certain areas, but like, she's the one doing the work. Like, this is a person that shows up and does the work required. And it's just so cool that we get to be a part of that journey with people. It's incredible.
It is. I couldn't agree more. And watching people's lives change, because it really does in a lot of ways. It's just, it's really a blessing. And I feel very grateful for where I am, for sure.
And so you had an education and then you decided to become a naturopath. Why? Like, what was that transition like? And why did you make that decision for yourself?
Well, so I was conventionally trained as a registered dietitian. I really didn't have a lot of an idea of what that all encompassed when I got into it. So I thought, oh, you know, I'm going to learn about food and learn about how to manipulate food for, you know, performance or whatever else. And then I realized, oh man, this is really heavy clinical medicine. This is very, like, most dietitians, vast majority, like 90% work in a hospital. And so I didn't realize that, but I got involved and I started to really like it. And that's what got me into conventional medicine to begin with. And I got this education as a registered dietitian. I was taught all the conventional nutrition guidelines, everything that we hear from the USDA and all this stuff. And really, one, I was struggling with my own health. And then number two, I was really struggling. I worked at the VA hospital with veterans at the time. I was really struggling to get my veterans healthy. And I was struggling with my own weight issues and health problems. And then nothing was changing for them. And I really had like this young life crisis where I was just like, what is going on? Nothing I'm doing matters. I'm wasting these people's time and my own time because nothing is changing. And I feel terrible. And so that's when I started to kind of dig into these natural alternative medicine kind of therapeutic diets that I really, at that point, I was so desperate to find any healing and health that I tried everything. And that's really what got me kind of down this homeopathic, or however you want to call it, trail, is my experience with conventional medicine and nutrition was just really bad. And I just did not feel like I was effective at all for these people. And that was really what ultimately changed my mind, is when I started to see success trying my own thing. And then I started implementing some of that with my veterans. And then I started to see just massive changes and massive results with them. I just knew that there was a better way. And that's really what shifted, kind of got me off the trail of conventional medicine, nutrition, and more down these alternative paths.
What were the key revelations happening at that time where you were like, I was taught this, I'm doing this, it's not working, let's try X? Like, what were those shifts like? Like, what was the X that you were trying?
You know, I think the first and foremost, the thing was the one that threw me for the biggest loop was the carbohydrate recommendations in general. For what really started to get my mind ticking was when we were treating type 2 diabetics in the hospital and we were giving them like 60 grams of carbohydrates per meal and then 30 to 45 grams per snack. And I was talking to a nurse one day and I was like, well, how do you treat this with the insulin? Because we see these spikes because they're being monitored so tightly in the hospital. And she's like, oh, well, we just dose the insulin based on how many carbohydrates they're getting. And I thought to myself, that feels extremely backwards. Like, that doesn't make any sense. And if you know, having to use more and more insulin is very damaging long term. And so I kept thinking in my mind, like, these people are in the hospital because of complications of type 2 diabetes, and we're actively watching this get worse. And so that was really kind of the first thing that I realized, oh man, I think these carbohydrate recommendations, especially for sick people or metabolically unhealthy people, is just wrong. And then my mind started thinking, oh, well, I have PCOS. That's kind of like diabetes of the ovaries. Maybe I'm struggling with a little bit of carbohydrate overload as well. And so that's when I started kind of messing with carbohydrates, pulling them down, introducing more protein, introducing a lot more fiber and a variety of vegetables and things like that. When I started to see real change. And so that was, I would say that was my X moment. And then of course that led me down the road of getting my hands on Dr. Bickman's Why We Get Sick and Jason Fung's. And then your book was next. And so I just started to just engulf this information. And I was like, whoa, we have gotten this way wrong. We're being very retroactive with people's health. And to me, that's really setting up them for failure long-term when we can't prevent these things. We're just treating the symptoms that come behind it with these high blood glucose and all this stuff. So I think that was my X moment, to be honest.
Yeah, I have a friend who's a brilliant nurse. She's one of the smartest individuals I know. She's a total nerd. And her mother-in-law has diabetes. And we were talking about kind of the diet and how they structure it. And she gets her CGM data, her mother-in-law's CGM data on her phone. And she was just showing me her glucose regulation. I'm like, whoa, what did she have for her glucose went up to 250, 275. She's like, no, this is a good day. I'm like,
no,
I don't think this is a good day. This is not a good day. And she said, and I asked, like, what did she have for dinner? And then she talks about all the carbohydrates that she had, and they limit the fiber because then the glucose will stay elevated because of the carbohydrates, and they limit the protein. And I'm like, Kate, all right. It's totally backwards. It's like if I'm anaphylactic to peanuts, I'm not going to go and eat some peanuts.
No, right? Like, no. And you know what else too that I found when I was in the hospital is all of the numbers that they consider normal are extremely loose. So like by the time you catch somebody with a blood glucose issue, they're raging insulin resistant. So like by the time we catch a type 2 diabetic, they've probably been insulin resistant for 15 years. And so it's like we have let these people be kind of in a place of ignorance, not on their behalf, on the medical facility's behalf. And they've just done all this damage to their bodies. And it's like, once you kind of understand what that's doing long-term, it's like, whoa, we've got to get the word out. We've got to stop this from happening for 10 to 15 years, because now they're at risk for heart attack and stroke. They're at risk for everything, higher risk of cancer and all this other stuff. So that was a big frustration of mine in conventional medicine too, is like, why do we let people get like very sick before we tell them, oh, you've got to change your habits? And that bothered me quite a bit, because not only is it a burden to the individual and it puts them at risk, but it's a burden to our healthcare system. People are paying a lot more money. Like we have, I don't know, I could go on and on, but my point is it's just, we wait far too late before we decide to make decisions in our health. And a lot of times people don't even have a second chance, you know? And so I don't know, that bothered me quite a bit when I was in the hospital too. It's like, we've got to wake up quicker.
Yeah. My dad has been tracking his PSA for quite some time. And every time he goes to the doctor, it's a couple points higher. And I'm like, why are we waiting on this? Why?
Yep.
Maybe we should do something about it now until it gets, like, it's clearly going up every year.
So, it's trending in what, like, direction?
Let's look at the trend. And so if somebody's new to the concept of low carb eating, or maybe even they're not and they just need some encouragement when it comes to insulin resistance, what are some of the key signs that we need to be thinking of with insulin resistance? Like you said that it takes 15 years before your doctor likely is going to say anything and there's going to be a major issue. What are some of the key signs leading up to that that we can start thinking about before that 15-year mark and things are a mess?
Yeah. So I like to think the very beginning signs when you start to notice things are wrong is even just like the little things, like mood changes or getting sleepy after meals or having a hard time sleeping, even low sex drive, skin issues, like noticing acne or a little bit of psoriasis here, maybe dandruff, and things like that that are just not optimal in general. I think I go back because when you talk to people, oftentimes they'll say, oh, I haven't felt good for years. And it's like, okay, well, when did you start noticing things were wrong? And that's when really I encourage people to start doing some digging, whether it's maybe it's appetite changes, or maybe you're starting to notice a little bit of a belly come and you don't really know why, or you're having a hard time building muscle in the gym. There's just so many. I think some of the more red flags that you'll see with people, one would be some labs. When I start to see HDL trending pretty low, that's a red flag for me. When I start to see triglycerides over 89, you know, conventional medicine will let you go to 150. I don't really like to see them over 89, to be honest. I think even just slight elevations in blood pressure are can be a red flag signal. I think anytime, especially with women, when you start to see things happening with your cycle, whether it's short cycle, long cycle, heavy bleeding, light, whatever, that can be those indicators where you're like, maybe you don't rush to the doctor and get you know, 200 labs pulled, but maybe you start to wake up and be a little bit more mindful of, okay, is something going a little wrong? Am I eating a little bit too much sweets at night? Whatever. I think some of the behaviors around food can be telling as well. Like, I think if you eat a large meal with protein and all the things, and you're hungry within an hour or two, can be a pretty telling. I think fatigue after meals, maybe even feeling like you need a little bit of a sweet after any meals, or having a hard time controlling cravings, can be some other ones. And then, you know, there's the key tall tale signs in labs, like your fasting blood glucose is going over 85, your fasting insulin, if they're even pulling it, is over 6. So like those types of things, I think, are screaming red flags. But anything, you know, chronic disease doesn't happen overnight. Your body will start telling you over and over again. You just have to really keep an ear out and listen.
Are you tired of feeling tired? Do you always hit the snooze button and then slam your head straight back on the pillow? With all of the problems you have to take care of at work, at home, with your family, with your friends, it's no wonder you feel so tired. You take care of a lot of different things, and sometimes it's about sitting down and figuring out how to slash things or get more creative with the hours in your day. And sometimes it's about filling the gaps where your diet just isn't hitting the mark. Enter magnesium loss. This is the number one reason why most of us are tired. We are blowing through our magnesium quicker than we can get it in. Magnesium Breakthrough is an all-natural supplement that helps you reduce fatigue and sleep more peacefully. It even strengthens muscle and improves your heart and brain function. While most magnesium supplements aren't full spectrum, Magnesium Breakthrough is the only magnesium supplement on the market that contains the optimal ratio of all 7 essential types of magnesium. Imagine having the strength and energy to get out of bed in the morning and face the day boldly and courageously, to be able to show up as your best self and keep that energy up throughout the day and into the night. So if you want to feel more energized and get the best night's sleep you've had in like forever, check out buyoptimizers.com/keto diet. In addition to the discount that you get using the promo code KETODIET10, you can get gifts with purchase up to 2 travel size bottles of Magnesium Breakthrough. Act fast. This is a limited time offer. Go to buyoptimizers.com/keto diet. That's buyoptimizers.com/keto diet and use the code KETODIET10.
Totally. So what are your thoughts? Because you mentioned the cycle and changes in the cycle. There's a big push right now for hormone regulation. I would say that 90% of the clients that I bring on to my practice are like, I'm here to treat my hormones.
Yeah.
And I'm like, your hormones are only responding to the issue. How does that play a role in insulin regulation, blood sugar regulation, and how our hormones are supported or not supported?
Yeah. I love you that you bring this up, because it is true. It's very trendy right now. And I'm guilty to it to some degree of like posting.
Me too.
So, you know, but it's like, hormones are so critical, and they'll tell you so much. They do everything in the body. They're keeping you in a state of homeostasis or regulated. And so, you know, I tell people like insulin's kind of one of those hormones that it's like upriver or upstream to everything else. And when it starts to go a little funky, everything will start to go a little funky. And so that's what I kind of explained. Now, that's not always the case, of course. There's the cortisol and thyroid negative feedback loop. There's all these different checks and balances in the body, but insulin is so powerful and such a modulator that when it's off, you can consider things like testosterone to be low, or maybe even testosterone to be high. So there's just so many different things that when I talk to women, I tell them like, your cycle is so powerful, because when it's coming regular, on time, normal bleeding, you're not having these horrific PMS symptoms or fibroids and all these different things, that's a good indicator that things in your hormones are pretty regulated, or and or they're keeping things in a relatively stable state of homeostasis for the body. And so looking at all of that and understanding how insulin can change downstream and change these hormones downstream, I think, is important. And oftentimes female cycles, I think, are the first indicator that something is wrong. And so because we're so acutely aware of it, not everyone, but I think we all should be, in terms of what that is doing to our hormones.
Yes, I know that I've become acutely aware of my cycle ever since I got mine back from having amenorrhea for so long. But I found over time, as I got more and more comfortable with just having a cycle, I would forget what cycle day I was on. I wouldn't be tracking it. It would like surprise me. I'd be like, oh, look, it's day one. Like I would have no idea what was happening. And I find wearing like an Oura ring or something that's tracking things can be really helpful. Like I'm supposed to get my period any moment, like probably today. And I am so freaking tired today. Like normally I stand and do podcast interviews. I am sitting. Like,
yeah,
I am exhausted. And even just having that data point, like I checked my phone this morning. I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like today's the day that I'm going to be fatigued. Those little checkpoints are just so helpful because otherwise I'm like, what did I eat? You know, like whatever, like all those things that go through your mind of what's going on? Why am I feeling this way? I agree with you. Tracking your cycle and just understanding where you're at is such good, good data that we can collect that's free to collect.
Totally. And they have so many cool little gadgets now. And I'm not the one to say run out and buy a new gadget, but there's a lot of like urine hormonal trackers now. Accuracy is somewhat questionable, but to some degree, they're pretty good. And some are better than others. But yeah, we have all these devices at hand. And just understanding that how the cycle works is just so helpful. You know, I'll schedule like vacations based on when my cycle is going to be and what week I'll have like the most energy and feel the best and all that kind of stuff. So it's very fun and enlightening once you kind of get to know your body in that way.
Yes. I recently booked a trip to Italy for my birthday, totally randomly. And there was a seat sale and I just booked it without thinking. And then I'm tracking my cycle. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'll be traveling on day two of my cycle. I'm like,
no, thank you.
Why did I do that? But your girl's going to Italy on day two.
Yeah,
that's what we're doing. We're just going to do
off.
Exactly. Okay. So you mentioned mindfulness. Like, what does that look like for blood sugar support? Can you kind of go through, you know, you mentioned to be mindful of things. What kind of things should we be doing to support our blood sugar and therefore our hormones in many ways?
So I think just being cognizant of one, a lot of times people are very weird about their hunger hormones. So people will ignore them based off of like an influencer's routine, or they will set their day up and they just won't even think about what they actually feel. It'll be based off of, oh, well, this like diet plan told me to do this, or this particular skinny influencer is doing this and she doesn't eat till 10 and I'm going to push that back. So I think just separating yourself from what everyone else is doing and really getting really in tune of like, okay, do I wake up hungry? If I do, I need to eat. And then really trying to base your meals off of understanding blood sugar stability. So like eating your non-starchy high fiber vegetables first, protein second. And then if you're going to have some carbs, have that last. And then understanding, okay, when I eat like that, how do I feel afterwards? And then that goes both ways, right? I think even being mindful, like if you go out for queso margaritas and a ton of chips, like how do you feel after that? And really just keeping this constant like log in your head of like, I feel this way when I do this. I feel this way when I do this. And adjusting your behaviors based off of that. And I try to really be open about not everyone's going to be the same. Not all these strategies are going to work for everyone. A lot of them are pretty similar across the board, like meal timing and nutrient timing and going for a walk after your meals and getting sunshine first thing in the morning. And so I think when it comes to mindfulness, just trying these things, seeing how you feel, if it feels good for you and you can fit it in your routine, keep it. And then doing the opposite. If you, you know, go out for drinks and you feel terrible and your sleep is horrible and you're getting, you know, bloated and inflamed, then maybe that's something you need to do less of. And so I think we've just become so disconnected with the way we feel, the way our bodies or what our bodies are telling us, that we just forget that, okay, well, we're in control of a lot of this stuff and we can shift things to make us feel better. And ultimately coming down to like, okay, you don't have to do exactly what XYZ is doing on Instagram or TikTok or whatever else to control blood sugar and be healthy. You can pick up a lot of the healthy principles, but it doesn't necessarily have to look the exact same for you. And a lot of it's based off of your genetics and your nutrients and your history and your routines and kids and all the things.
Do you feel like also where we can kind of get hung up is what I did 2 years ago felt really good, so I'm just going to do that again and it doesn't work? And we kind of get stuck in the but this worked before. Why isn't it working now? Like, do you feel like it changes over time? And that's why it's important to constantly say, well, this, you know, working out fasted worked for me for a time, but I am not feeling it now. Is that okay for it to change? Is that normal for it to change?
110%. I think I've seen this a lot in my own life. I used to be extremely strict keto. I used to do some of that fasted working out, and that has changed dramatically for me. So yes. And I think constantly evaluating where you are, what you're doing, and what's working, and really like letting go of that all or nothing, black or white thinking that it's either this way and it's right, or it's this way and it's wrong, and being willing to try new things and being open to experimentation and trusting your body and trusting that it's going to tell you if things are working, it's not. But yes, 100%. One of the things I often hear with people when they become my client is they're like, Temple, I did keto 5 years ago and I lost like 60 pounds. And now I do keto and the weight won't move. And at first I was kind of like nervous to tell them, but like maybe keto isn't the option for you right now, and or vice versa. Maybe the person was saying, hey, I used to eat like a ton of whole grains and all this stuff and it worked. I could lose weight in a dime, but now that's not working for me. Well, you know, it might be time to just make a bit of an adjustment. And I think especially with the female body and cycle, it's so amazing and so cool long-term, but there's a lot of changes we go through. We go through, you know, pre-puberty, puberty, perimenopause, menopause, children, and breastfeeding. All of these things bring on like different times and different things that may be helpful. And so I think just keeping an open mind and not being super rigid and strict on yourself, because that just creates a lot of stress long-term, you know? So 110%, I agree with what you're saying. It's keep an open mind with that for sure.
Yes, it's so true. I'm going through that myself personally a little bit right now. I was using a higher carb diet than I was used to fuel my training. And I've felt like over the last month or two, I'm craving a little bit more fats and less carbohydrates. And for the first month, I was like, no. This is what we're doing. This is the layout. And then I would binge on fat. And then I was like, Leanne, check yourself.
High carb,
like,
and high fat.
Exactly. Like, check yourself. Okay, let's lower the carbs, increase the fat, and see where we go with this. Like, it's okay to shift, and you have the tools. But the last thing you want, just like you mentioned, is high fat, high carb. Like, choose the macro you're going to focus on. Either it's fat or carb, not both. And I think that's where I would say when I'm looking over food logs of women that have eaten a ketogenic diet for some time, and then like they've kind of gotten away from it, and they're kind of like in this gray zone, they're doing high fat, high carb. Would you agree?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, that's probably one of the top three mistakes I see is like they're not adjusting well, and it's both. And then you're definitely good. That's a recipe for weight gain. I mean, that's what farmers and everyone uses to fatten up their livestock and stuff. So yeah, it can create problems really quickly. But yeah, it's being willing to shift and understanding what to do and having that like a bit of a plan too, I think is important of when you are shifting.
Yes, a plan. That is so essential, because I think what can happen times is like you'll say, okay, well, today I did really well with this and I'm just going to do that, until you get distracted with something from TikTok and you're like, I'm just going to fold that in. And you're kind of at the whims of whatever you're seeing for the day, and there's no direction. And it can be helpful like the first of every month or once every quarter, like sitting down and being like, okay, over the next month or over the next 3 months, this is my plan. I'm going to stick to it. I might, you know, bookmark little things to look at next time I assess these things. But overall, I find sitting down with a plan so you don't get distracted is so helpful. So
100%. And then even like with your plan, have like, okay, so if you're going to try lower carb, high protein keto this month, have like a little bit of like, okay, if I'm not feeling well on this, this is what I'll go to. So you kind of have like your way out, but it's still structure, right? It's not like, okay, if I'm not feeling good, I'm just going to go binge on the gluten-free pizza or whatever. So like have your kind of exit strategy. You're not even an exit strategy, but like a plan B in case that your strategy isn't feeling great. So yes, it all comes down to structure, but then also being able to understand when to pivot, you know?
Yeah, being a little nimble. So your ex issue, and you're in the hospital, you're seeing these issues, this is how you learned it's not working. No. A lot of it had to do with carbohydrates. What has been your ex issue recently? Like, what have you seen in the space that you just weren't overly thrilled with, and you're kind of pivoting in certain thoughts or ideas when it comes to health?
Do you mean like in the keto space?
Keto space, health space, wherever all you want to take it.
Yeah. You know, I think one thing that has been kind of my ex now is one, just the vast amount of stuff that we don't know when it comes to nutrition and health. And I think that the longer I've been in this space, the more I've realized, oh my goodness, like we actually don't know anything. Like when, especially when it comes to nutrition research, when you really start reading some of this, I would say like 80% to 90% of the studies are just absolute garbage. If you look who sponsors them, you know, there's that recent one that was saying like, if you eat more protein, you're going to be at risk for cardiovascular disease. And then come to find out the protein that they gave them was Boost. So it's just like, which is a nutritional drink that's just filled with syrup, corn syrup, solids, and just horrible. So, you know, I think that that's one thing that brings me down to like, okay, we don't know a ton. We know some, we don't know a ton, but that just brings me back to, okay, I need to treat the individual and what they're going through and what's going to work best for them. So I always get humbled when it comes to like, oh, this is the newest study and this is what it says we should everybody change, et cetera. But coming back down to that individual. And then I would say that kind of the other X that I'm kind of going through right now is I'm in naturopathic doctor school, which is fantastic and so fun. And I'm learning about just a ton of modalities that I have never learned about, stem cell and peptides and lots of different herbs and homeopathy and all these different things. But I think understanding in that space, it can get, like we were talking a little bit before we went live, is it can get a little bit like a quote unquote woo woo. And so, you know, I think it's really important to have a really strong belief set, a set of morals, a set of values that you prescribe to and that you can hold to the truth on, especially when you're treating clients and patients. Because I think without that, you can get a little bit lost in, you know, the energy medicine and all this other stuff that the world brings to the table when it comes to health and healing and naturopathy and all this other stuff. But for me, I really just want to make sure that some of these things can be helpful, maybe in some scenarios, depending on what they are, but making sure that I'm also sticking to what my belief system is and what I know to be true.
Do you feel like there's also a level of individuals that just feel so incredibly lost and broken that they use these forms like keto, working out, homeopathy, whatever, that it can become just such a deep idol?
Oh, without
that
question.
Can be a huge issue for our health overall.
Yeah. And when you're sick and when you're, you know, you're sick and you don't feel well. And in the world, I mean, the world is lost. Like nobody knows what direction to turn in. It seems like it's only going, which we know this is to be true, right? And as a believer, we know what the Bible says is it doesn't necessarily get easier for us. And so we know kind of what to expect. And so, yeah, I think a lot of people are lost. And I think that will cause people to grab for straws that may not be helpful or turn things into idols and turn things into these things that they think will fix them or make them feel happy. If only if I lose 60 pounds, or if only I can put my Hashimoto's in remission or whatever, it becomes this obsession and this idol. And, you know, I think it's helpful to move to health in a lot of ways. But I think, again, coming back to, we live in a broken world, our bodies are broken. We are, you know, we're always going to kind of live in this until we pass and move on. And so, yes, I think that being able to recognize when those things become an idol or those things, and I'm guilty of this as well. I have to catch myself like, oh, I know so much. I can help so much. And it's like, well, you don't know anything. Like, you know, and the Lord is totally guiding the steps. And a lot of times that even clients that I'm working with. So yeah, without question, I think being able to recognize that is huge and is actually healthier in a lot of ways, you know?
I started taking Keon Aminos because I want muscle on my body. More muscle burns more calories. More muscle increases metabolic flexibility, allowing you to have more freedom with your carb intake. It helps you sleep better. It protects you as you age. The list goes on and on and on. Basically, what I need you to hear is that muscle is a good thing. Now, protein is essential for muscle growth. Your protein needs increase as you age, and I bet you are not getting enough protein on a daily basis unless you're really, really prioritizing it. Most of the ladies that I connect with are eating around 0.2 grams of protein per pound of body weight, and it should be a minimum of 0.8 grams. That's four times more than what we're eating currently as ladies. Now, Keon is an essential amino acid blend with no calories. It's a great way to hit your protein needs without filling up your belly. Since starting up with Keon, I take a scoop with every meal. I've noticed far better recovery from my workouts and better muscle definition. The ISSN, which is widely recognized as the authority on the latest cutting-edge and non-biased information on sports nutrition, just announced their position on essential amino acid supplements, or EAAs, for muscle and performance. The paper goes into a bunch of benefits and supporting studies, but the biggest takeaway for me was reading that EAAs are more effective than protein at stimulating muscle protein synthesis. So if you're trying to put on muscle, if you're trying to lose weight and maintain your lean muscle, which is absolutely essential, otherwise you're going to downregulate your metabolism, or even if you're getting older and you're worried about maintaining your muscle mass, taking an EAA supplement is going to be one of the best things you can do for yourself as we age. Keon Aminos are an essential amino acid supplement that I've been taking to boost my protein intake and assist with my body recomp goals. This is a powder that you just add to water, and it's a fabulous way to get in your essential aminos into your day without loading your system with more and more food. You can go to getkeon.com/keto. That's getkeon.com/keto and save 20% off Keon Essential Aminos, a fundamental supplement for fitness. Again, that's getkeon.com/keto for 20% off.
Yes, completely. I know I have so many stories of myself personally, or even clients, where we're on big protocols and like nothing is working. And instead of pushing through it, I'm like, you know what? Actually, we're going to take away everything. We're going to take away absolutely everything. I want you to do this one thing this month. And we start to see shifts. And so I sometimes, like, more is not better. That goes with basically everything. You know, it's that balance. Can we talk a little bit about fasting just slightly? Because I feel like we didn't touch on it enough. And I know that there was a woman being like, wait, Leanne, go back, fasting. What are your thoughts on fasting and cortisol and its like impact on the body overall? I think we're getting away from this where we are forcing ourselves to fast and having really, really low intake days. But I know that there are still a ton of women that are doing fasting every single day, in addition to then a couple 24-hour fasts. And what are your thoughts on fasting and how has that changed over time?
Oh, it's changed immensely over time. So I fell into the same trap, you know, 5-6 years ago. I was like, oh, fasting, it's the best thing that has ever come. Like, it gets you into ketosis quickly, like all these things. And I totally ignored the female makeup and the female reproductive cycle and all this other stuff. And I was doing that. And honestly, it was giving me anxiety. I wasn't feeling well. I would end up eating just a ton because I was so hungry, you know, after these fasts. And you know, I had some questions. I was like, oh, maybe this isn't the best for me. I feel like I'm doing a lot of ignoring my body and ignoring my hunger hormones. And then when you really look at the intermittent fasting studies, and you know this, basically none of them are done on women only. And they're definitely not done to the level of like, what stage of her cycle is she in? And has she had a child? Is she nursing? Like all the things. And so I think understanding that a lot of intermittent fasting can be a fantastic modality when done correctly in the right setting at the right time. But I think women are far more sensitive to this than men are in general. I think men can easily get away with skipping a day of eating and have zero problems. And so I think when we are constantly trying to push this, and this kind of goes back to what we were saying in the beginning of like, oh, well, this worked for them, I'm going to try it too. And it's like, yeah, but you feel terrible and you don't like, you're not seeing results. You've intermittent fasted breakfast for 6 months and you haven't lost a pound. Like that has to be an indicator that maybe this isn't the right thing to be doing. And so, yeah, my intermittent fasting views have gone down quite a bit. Now, when I talk to my clients, I usually say, yeah, you know, maybe 1 to 2 to 3 times a week, pull your dinner up really early and finish dinner at like 4 and just be done, go for a walk and go to bed early, you know? And so that's kind of like where I went from doing as much as you want in the morning, whenever, like maybe throwing in 24 hours to now I'm like, whoa, don't necessarily do a 24 hour or 48, like maybe just try a couple days of evening or dinner skipping and then go from there. And then that has really helped a lot of my clients and in terms of sleep, in terms of stress, all of it. And I love that the conversation is getting brought up about cortisol. I think we've only really scratch the surface with cortisol and understanding the negative feedback loop with thyroid hormones and all the things. But I do think cortisol is important. And I do hope more and more research comes out about cortisol and dietary patterns, specifically to females' bodies and reproductive cycles, because it's missing. And I think women, again, like with intermittent fasting, I think that that was one of the things that it messed up quite a bit. I think it really can mess with cortisol. And I think cortisol is trending right now on socials, which is good in a way because it's alerting people to like, oh, maybe you're doing too much. It's also kind of bad because nobody really understands that it's supposed to be a little high in the morning and go low throughout the day. So it's like there's a little bit of misinformation online about cortisol, but overall, I'm glad it's being brought up.
It's sort of like the misinformation about glucose. Like there are a couple individuals that share like, look at my glucose post-workout. I'm like, yeah. Or, you know, look at my cortisol post-workout. It's like, yeah, like this is how your body is naturally supposed to respond. This is a normal thing. Like, let's not mess that up. I love that you mentioned dinner skipping. I don't know. I think it was like Keto for Normies. They shared that they were skipping dinner. And I was like, what do you mean skipping dinner? Fasting is only skipping breakfast. Like, I just couldn't wrap my head around it. And so I started doing it myself and it's way better.
Oh, yeah.
Way better. And two, if you eat too close to bedtime, your resting pulse, like your resting heart rate will be more elevated and you may not recover as well. And so I know that I'm ready to do like just skipping dinner or making dinner a little bit earlier, like a couple of hours when my resting heart rate is elevated. And it can be a good way to having like a really good sleep. Like you said, early dinner, walk, go to bed early after having a bath or something like that. And I find I recover far better, but we're talking like once every 2 weeks, maybe I do this. Like it's not a big thing, but I love that you mentioned dinner skipping because I know that when I heard that the first time, it was like, cannot compute. What are you saying?
What do you mean? Yeah, no, totally. I do. I feel way better on it as well. And it gives me a chance, like my kids get home from school and I don't have a lot of time between then and when they go to sleep. So it gives me a chance to just really kind of chill out. I'm not worried about like, oh, what am I going to eat and going like, and I can feed them. I can talk with them. I can do all these things. And then I do find that this is can be helpful for people that don't feel hungry for breakfast either. Cause if you pull dinner up, like you're going to probably feel hungry for breakfast. And so I think it can really help those people that have skipped breakfast so long that they have just lost ghrelin in the morning and have maybe even have some cortisol issues there. I think it can be a good alternative for them to kind of not freak out and eat all the time, but pull dinner up a little bit early and get those hunger hormones to return to normal in the morning.
Yeah. How do you know if your fasting strategy is like not working?
I think if you have to force it, it's probably not working. So like, I think if you're like fasting and you're hungry and you cannot like drop that thought in pretty quick time just by a distraction or whatever. Like if it's constantly coming up, don't. Like you probably need to stop. Your body is telling you need to stop. The other things that are like you've ignored this signal for far too long is like if you start to lose hair or if your skin starts to become dry, you start to see some of those thyroid symptoms of like your T3 is struggling, then you should probably stop. I oftentimes people ask me, they're like, well, I'm losing hair. And I'm like, well, you need to absolutely stop intermittent fasting. That's like first step number one, you know? And, or if they're like struggling with fatigue, if they're like, oh, I'm doing all this intermittent fasting, but like I have no energy. Well, intermittent fasting is supposed to give you energy. So if you're not like feeling good on it, just in general, if you start to lose your libido, like that's a pretty good indicator things are getting a little wonky. So I tell people just like if you're intermittent fasting, especially females, especially of reproductive age, be careful, like be really cautious and be extra mindful and start very low and slow. A lot of times what people will do is they'll start working with me. They want to lose weight and they're like, okay, I'm going to go low carb, but I'm also going to start intermittent fasting 6 days a week. And I'm like, whoa, pump the brakes. Like, let's just do one at a time. And like, you don't even need to go cold turkey, low carb. Like, let's like figure out how much you're eating right now. Drop that by like 15 to 20 grams until we get you to a happy spot where you're feeling good, less inflamed, et cetera. And then maybe like in a month or two, we'll start intermittent fasting. So I think like, and I don't say that in a mocking way to like, because I commend people that are like that disciplined and are like, I'm sick of this. I want to change this so fast. I'm willing to implement anything. I think that's a good attitude in a lot of ways, but I certainly don't want you to like rebound and feel awful and start to lose your hair and not want to have sex with your husband and all the things that are just not fun in general.
Totally. And so what if on the flip side, you're just not hungry? Like you said, if you're hungry, and then what about the individuals? Like I think of a couple of clients that when we started working together and I'm like, track your food. And I'm like, are these complete trackers? Because you're eating like 700 calories a day consistently.
Like one time. Yeah.
Like for one meal. Like, are you okay? And they're like, yeah, it's great. I'm not hungry. Thoughts?
Well, I think that can come from a lot of things. I think that can come from years and years of yo-yo dieting and or a low metabolic rate where you've just trained your body to sustain off of such low calories. It's really not optimal in any way. So I tell people just go low and slow and do little things. Like if that's my client, I'm not going to force them to eat a 6-course meal 3 times a day, you know, in efforts to get their BMR up, to get their thyroid going, all the things. I'll start really slow. Like, hey, just in the morning, why don't you add 2 scoops of collagen to your coffee or have like a half of a boiled egg, just something to kind of stoke that. I hate to say stoke that because I don't want to get that confused with metabolism, but like, you know, get things moving again and really start slow and then say like, okay, if that client is averaging 700 calories, but like let's aim next week for 850 and then let's aim 1,000 for the next week. So like I try not to overwhelm people and or their bodies too much because that is a change. And doing things like I think resistance training can be really helpful as well, like using some energy so that your body like starts to signal. Nothing crazy. I would never suggest like someone like that do HIIT or anything, just because I think that would do more good than, or more damage than good. And so those types of things. And then really work on like the basics that we tend to always forget about. Like, are you sleeping? Do you get outside as quick as you can in the morning? Like things like, you know, the foundations, I would say.
Yeah. What I'm really, really hearing you say throughout the answer of your last question and this current question is like progression. And I can tell you that this applies not only for the food aspect, but also the movement aspect. Like if you go in, if you've never worked out before in your life and all of a sudden you do 6 days a week, 2 hours a day, like it's not, you don't need to go that hard out the gate. You're going to see like some really positive shifts and changes with small adjustments. And it actually makes space for more adjustments later so that your body constantly changes. Because if you go right out the gate, balls to the wall, as hard as possible, it's, you have nowhere else to go. And I see this a lot of the times with cardio. You know, if you've been eating in a surplus and you want to start cutting down, that's cool. Like drop your calories a little bit, maybe incorporate one cardio session at 10 minutes. And then next month, maybe another cardio session at 10 minutes. So like your body's constantly shifting as opposed to all out the gate, all that you can, let's get it done. I'm really hearing you say that in almost everything that you've answered is just progression, like a slow and steady burn as opposed to wildfire.
100%. And I think it just increases the chances that you're going to feel good doing it and stick to it longer. I, you know, 5 years ago, you asked me that same question. And I said, no, do everything at once. And then my clients are like 2 weeks in and they're like, this is awful. I feel my routine is so messed up. I have no time. I feel terrible and all the things. And I'm just like, this does not work for long-term success. And it allows the person to figure out what they really like and enjoy and feel good doing. And so, yeah, 100%. That's a great way to describe it. I think that that is the best way when you're making lifestyle changes is slow and steady wins the race there for sure.
Yes. And then you're actually able to keep the weight off. You're actually able to enjoy your life as opposed to just torture until you get to some nebulous number or feeling. Exactly. And then you're just, oh, no, I don't need to do anything. And that, yeah, it's this whole situation. So over time, how have your thoughts, you know, coming from a deeper keto space to now kind of looking at the body more individually, how have your thoughts on protein changed over time?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So I think we used to really fear, the ketogenic space used to really demonize protein. And it was just very like, oh, you can't eat too much protein. It's going to kick you out of ketosis and you'll make glucose, da, 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 da. And it's like, to some degree, yes, but the vast majority of people aren't going to be able to do that. And so I have switched from that mindset of like, oh, you've got to caution your protein, make sure you're getting in all your added fats, all that, to really honestly just looking at the way that the Lord made food. Like protein is pretty well packaged with fat in a lot of ways. And so I think that I have switched from caution with your protein to more like, yeah, it's pretty free protein. I would say not caution fat, but if you eat the right protein, your fat comes pretty well packaged with it. And so, and I'm absolutely not against adding fat. So a very normal meal for me will be red meat and avocado and then some massive helping of greens and veggies and all the fun things. But yeah, so it has switched from fear protein, it's going to kick you out of ketosis, to protein's probably my favorite macronutrient, if I'm being completely honest, in terms of satiation and being the building block of everything, when protein is packaged correctly. I think when people just really mess this up is when they're like, oh, protein, I'm going to add the trashiest, most cheap, inorganic form of whey that I can find. And I'm going to just add, you know, birthday cake whey to everything. And it's like, okay, but that's probably terrible. And I can't, you cannot tell me that your gut feels good doing that. And so I think there's a balance of like, if you're eating whole foods and real foods and animal protein and even plant protein to a degree, you probably don't need to eat 2 to 3 Quest bars a day. So that is kind of the mistake I've seen when we have switched to this mindset of protein, is a lot of people devalue nature's protein and really try to hold on to some of these, you know, processed. It's just processed food. It's just packaged differently.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the same could be said for when you start a ketogenic diet and you're just adding fat to everything and you're brutal. Drinking the fatty coffees and you're eating like a bag of Costco nuts at your desk every week. And it's like,
and you've gained 5 pounds and you're like, wait, this is supposed to be doing the opposite.
Yeah. 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 Like, I think one of the big mistakes is just overdoing it.
Yeah.
And I love the way that you said that, like, fat comes packaged well. You don't really need to add much of it if you're eating a whole food diet that's not low fat. It'll kind of just figure itself out.
Totally.
And so that's why I'm not like a super huge fan of the fatty coffee.
No.
Situation. No. Like, it's,
I know. I've seen a lot of people mess it up. Like, it's just like, oh, well, I added 2 tablespoons of MCT oil to my smoothie. And I'm like, well, why? Like, but yeah, don't do that. Yeah. So that would be in my like top 5 keto mistakes as well, is like, you don't need to eat a half a stick of butter. Like, you don't need to do that.
And I think the protein piece too, sometimes I just forget what my body needs. And the other day I have a creamy, like a Ninja creamy. I'm obsessed with this thing. If you don't already have one, like, you definitely need one. And I've been playing around with not having any stevia or monk fruit for a time to just give myself some time. And so I found this new protein powder. It didn't have any flavors or anything. And I made ice cream and I ate it. And then I was like so hungry after, like, I just was not satiated. I'm like, but it has 40 grams of protein. I don't understand. And so then I went and ate more carbs, because that's what you do when you're not satiated from your meal, is you go toward the carbs. And about halfway through my second waffle, I'm like, hold on a minute. That was bone broth protein, which is not a complete protein, which, this is why I'm hungry. So I literally took the smallest bit of chicken that I had left over in the fridge and I ate it. And within minutes, I'm like, okay, yep, that sucked. And it's crazy too, that even the protein quality, like, it really does make a difference. So now with my creamies, I'm doing like a different strategy with that.
Yeah.
Because even too, the protein quality matters just as much. And so instead of relying a creamy as my meal, I make it like a little snack with avocado, some chocolate powder, and like 1 scoop of the bone broth protein, and have that after a meal instead of relying on it as the whole meal. And so those little shifts make a big difference.
Yeah, 100%. It packaged with fat, that's usually, I've made that mistake many a time. I'll make a smoothie and I'm like, I just drank like 16 ounces. Like, why am I not full? You know? And it's like, oh, I didn't add anything. Like, I didn't add any frozen avocado or, you know, hemp seed or something to give me a little bit of fat there.
Duh.
It's funny.
So we still make those mistakes. Okay. So last time you were on the show, we talked about weight loss resistance. And I wonder if you've kind of thought more about like pollutants and environmental stuff as it relates to weight loss resistance, and kind of if you've seen connections there, if you feel like that falls in line with weight loss resistance, or what's kind of your thought on our environment and its impacts on what we've talked about today.
Yes, I would say that's probably been one of the biggest revelations I've had in the last year and a half, is starting to understand just the sheer amount of stuff we are exposed to day to day. Is it can be a little bit scary. And at first I fell into a little bit of this fear place of like, oh my gosh, once you start to see and you start to kind of look at things, and, you know, even just starting to scan products, you're like, my gosh, I thought I was doing pretty good with my products, and I'm really not, you know? And so to answer your question, I think, yes, I went down this road a little bit because we've all had that client where we're like, you're doing everything right. You're resistance training. You're eating like I couldn't make your macros look better and you're sleeping and your stress is good. Like, why is this weight just not moving? And why are you feeling so inflamed, et cetera? And so that's really what started to get me down the road of environmental medicine. And then I took a class because I'm in school right now. I had a whole class on environmental medicine, and what the physician who taught it was just, it was so, she was so phenomenal, and it was such a good class. And it was like, oh my goodness, this is absolutely a piece of the puzzle that we have been missing. And I think it gets missed often in the ketogenic world, low carb space, health space. Like, oftentimes you're written off as like kind of a tinfoil hat person, and you're just like, oh, that's that, you're being paranoid. But when you really start to look at it, the research is there, and it's pretty scary. I mean, I think there was just one that just came out about the glyphosate in Cheerios. And when you look and you read it, it's just like, wow, that we've ignored this, or why has this been so quiet or quieted? I don't know if that's the right verb, but so to answer your question, yes, I think this is absolutely a piece of the puzzle for some women. And I think it's one that we cannot ignore. And I think in 5 years from now, I think this will be one of the top things that we're talking about, because our government and the laws that we have, they just don't protect us against any of this stuff. And most of other countries, and I love our country for the record, but other countries have done such a better job of getting this stuff out of the food, out of the air, and out of the water, out of makeup, out of baby products, out of baby formula, that we have just, this has been a big epic fail for us. And so I think you could do a whole podcast on some of this stuff, but yes, I think this is a missing piece. And I think there's a fine line of like, you cannot be scared of this stuff because it's literally in the air that you breathe, but you also need to be aware of it so that you can make little changes that make a big impact.
Yes, I couldn't agree with you more. My husband, Kevin, he grew up in Germany, and a couple of years into our relationship, he was having some health issues. So we went to a naturopathic doctor, and she ran like a whole bunch of tests, and she didn't know at the time that he grew up in Germany. And so she asked like, where did you grow up? And he said, Germany. And she said, ah, okay. That's why you're sensitive to every single chemical here. And we found out that he was sensitive to artificial colors, flavors, like cannot have them. His body will shut down, like shut down. He is such a canary in the coal mine when it comes to those things. He knows instantly if he's had something that's fake. And so I agree with you. I think the food, water, air situation is such a key piece. I know that air, I think, is coming up. It's like the new thing that people are starting to think about. Like, we breathe in 20,000 liters of air on a daily basis. Like, that's more than you're eating in food. That's more than you're drinking in water. Like, air quality is such a key piece to all of this. And I agree with you. I think you can go a little bit nutso and start thinking like, the world is literally killing me. So there's that responsibility of just, I do what I can, and, you know, all those pieces. But I couldn't agree with you more. I know for myself, even when we moved from the boat to a house, where on the boat, I had a reverse osmosis system. I only bathed in reverse osmosis. And in the house, we just can't afford a full reverse osmosis system for the house. So I got filters on the shower heads. But for a couple of days before, I didn't have the shower filters and I was just bathing in regular water, I was getting the worst headaches. Like headaches, body pains. And my husband was like, as if. And I'm like, no, I swear to you, it's the water. I know it's the water. And so those little things, like, we don't realize how sensitive we are to these things until we pull them out. But I know that many, 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 many individuals, from the Cheerios to Oreos, are loaded with glyphosate. Glyphosate is a big issue, and these environmental pollutants are a huge issue. And looking at it responsibly of what can I manage and what is possible. And I think products like One Degree makes glyphosate free oats. So if you really love oats, that's a good option. And I found by even having a little bit of those oats, I don't react to them like I would the glyphosate rich ones. And that's so good. There are things that we can do for sure. I agree with you completely on that.
Yeah, it's very, it's pretty shocking once you start digging into that. And there's some really great resources on Instagram and other places. But yeah, that the air is, I live in Phoenix. So we're basically surrounded. It's like one of the most toxic cities in the United States, because basically the way Phoenix is it's one, it's huge. So there's like 6 million people here living in a small space, but then we're like surrounded by a mountain range. So even with wind, there's no clearing of the air. And so basically they describe Phoenix like as bad as Sao Paulo, Brazil at its worst. And so, but basically too, like all the airplanes that come and go, because it's an international airport and all this, it's very hot. So there's a lot of O's, all these things, it all hangs in the valley. And so we have like billboards here in Phoenix that are like, XXX is bad today. Make sure you carpool or stay inside, because you like, the first time we realized, my husband went for a run and he went really early in the morning. It was dark out. Like, we had no idea that the air could be so bad. And he came back and he's like, golly, my throat hurts. It's like, I feel like really sick. Like it feels like deep in my chest, my throat hurts. And he had this like horrible cough for like 2 weeks, and he's never sick. And I looked and there was like all these news bulletins that were like, don't do any outdoor activities in the valley because the air was so horrific. So anyway, I say all that to say, like, those types of things are fun, not fun, but like, you have to look at it, and it explains a lot. And especially if you know, you have little ones that they're just, their little bodies cannot take this load. And it's just, yeah, I know. Like I said, we could talk about this for a long time, but air doctors, reverse osmosis filters, all the things that you can do and can budget for are worth it, in my opinion. Yes,
totally, totally. I just installed our reverse osmosis like by the tap. Well, my husband did. There's no way that I could do that. I would have caused a leak. And oh man, what a difference. Like,
yeah, immediately.
What a difference. Immediately. And even that shower head, immediately. My headaches are gone. I'm not having pains. Like all these things. It's just, oh, so good. I mean, we could talk about all of this for forever, but I promise to let you go. Can you tell us where people can find more from you and how they can connect with you?
Yes. So I am on basically everything, TikTok, Instagram, Spotify, the.ketogenic.nutritionist. My name is Temple Stewart. And so, yeah, y'all come find me there. DM me if you want anything. And I do have a very small podcast. So I'm going to have you on my podcast now to talk all the things. So, but yeah, I would love to connect with your audience. You have great people and a great audience. So thank you so much for having me on. This is always a pleasure.
And what's your podcast called?
It's literally The Ketogenic Nutritionist.
Okay. Yeah, awesome.
All the same. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Makes it easy. Oh, very, Temple, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, you bet. This has been fun.
I hope you enjoyed our time with Temple. You can connect with her on Instagram at the.ketogenic.nutritionist and her website, templestewartrd.com. Okay, we'll see you back here next week for another episode. Bye. Thanks for listening. Join us next Tuesday for another episode of the Keto Diet Podcast. Looking for more resources? Go to healthfulpursuit.com for keto meal plans, weight loss programs, low carb recipes, and oodles of free resources to get you going. The Keto Diet Podcast, including show notes and links, provides information in respect to healthy living, recipes, nutrition, and diet, and is intended for informational purposes only. The information provided is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment, nor is it to be construed as such. We cannot guarantee that the information provided on the Keto Diet Podcast reflects the most up-to-date medical research. Information is provided without any representation or warranties of any kind. Please consult a qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding your health and nutrition program.